Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. A quick reminder before we get started, any advice provided by Brandon is general and does not consider your financial situation, needs, or objectives, so consider whether it's appropriate for you. Brandon van der Kolk is authorized to provide general financial product advice in Australia and is authorized representative number 1305795 of Guideway Financial Services Proprietary Limited, AFSL number 420367. Please see the description box for Brandon's financial services guide. Past performance is not a reliable indication of future investment returns. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Young Investors Podcast. Hamish Hodder, what's going on, my friend? Here we go again.
Here we go again. Yeah, it's a good week when the YouTube gods are on your side. So I've been blessed, fortunately.
Holy smokes, man.
Yeah, I had a crazy video, which is, I'm glad it did well because I put so much time into this video and I've put so much time into recent videos that have performed a lot worse than I expected. So it's good. I got some luck from the YouTube algorithm.
How many views is your latest video up to?
I think it did 300,000 in the first day, which is just crazy. Yeah, it's just insane. I checked this morning and it had 10,000 likes. Like I don't think I've ever had a video have 10,000 likes in a day. Like that's just a crazy stat.
Man, so. When YouTube's on your side, it's on your side. This is the thing that I love and hate about YouTube. We both love and hate about YouTube. When it's good, it's good. And when it's bad, it's bad.
You've got to be...
I was going to say, it was a good video though. If you haven't watched it, it's a really good breakdown on... basically China's economy. We've actually both made videos about China's economy recently, but yours is absolutely skyrocketing.
Crazy.
But it's good to see. Anyway, Hamish, in this episode, we are doing the news. Just one episode coming at you for this week, but we'll still run through the news. You got some Elon Musk news that I actually haven't heard about, so that'll be interesting because normally I'm across it all. I'm also going to be talking about Google's earnings, most recent earnings. And what's your last story, Hamish?
And then we're going to talk about some companies that are potentially cutting a lot of jobs in 2024. So we'll take a look at the job landscape going into the rest of this year.
A lot of layoffs happening, isn't there? Well, I guess we will talk about it. All right. Well, with that said, should we get into it?
Yeah. So today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings. And manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors. seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days. So go check it out if you haven't already.
All right, Hamish, where do you want to start today? You pick.
Let's start with this story, which, to be fair, this story is kind of a couple of weeks old, but I didn't really see it get... It kind of flew under the radar, and I thought it was kind of an interesting story, so I wanted to bring it up. And basically, the story is this story of potentially Elon Musk basically blackmailing Tesla shareholders.
Really?
And and it's got some twists and turns, and I thought it was an interesting story. So it is from a couple of weeks ago, but I don't think many people have seen this, and I just thought it was kind of a funny Elon tweeting some crazy stuff story. So I thought we'd kind of we could kind of go through it. So this happened, I think it was like the 15th or the 16th of January. Musk wrote on X or Twitter, I am uncomfortable growing Tesla to be a leader in AI and robotics without having about 25% voting control, enough to be influential, but not so much that I can't be overturned. Unless that is the case, I would prefer to build products outside of Tesla. So that's what he tweeted in the middle of of January. And to give some context, Musk currently owns about 13% of Tesla, which is a stake worth about $77 billion. Of course, he used to own a much larger percentage of Tesla, but he's done kind of a couple of sales recently, the biggest being about, how much it was, about $40 billion, I think, he sold in stock to fund the Twitter acquisition. I think the Twitter acquisition was like $44 billion or something like that. So I think I read an article.
He did sell a few different chunks at a few different times that were quite sizable, but I don't actually know how much it totaled. But yeah, he did sell to some of his stake to try and help him acquire that Twitter.
Yeah.
The Twitter platform, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember he had like the biggest tax bill ever or something. Like it was like a $16 billion tax bill or something from his compensation package, I think, that he received. So I think he sold a bunch of stock to pay for that compensation package as well. So he did used to own a much larger percentage of the company. He now owns about 13%. But his tweet kind of seems to suggest that he wants to have 25% of the company, which would give him another 12%. Or in market cap, that's another $72 billion.
Yeah, interesting. And interesting. I wonder, is there some way he can do it by like making a different class of share that's like not worth very much but has a lot of voting rights or something? I don't really know how this kind of stuff works.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that, I don't know, because it's just, hey guys, I've got good reason, but I'm just going to give myself some more shares.
Yeah, yeah. Brandon, you're too smart. You jumped the gun and...
We'll get to that later.
We will talk about dual class shares. But I just thought it was so funny because... like he says in the tweet, prefer to build products outside of Tesla, which kind of implies give me $70 billion or I'm going to make products elsewhere, or, you know, you don't have my full attention, which I just thought was like a very funny, tweet.
$72 billion or I walk.
Yeah, I just received a $50 billion compensation pack, the biggest in history, which he's getting sued over as well. But no, give me another $70 billion. $70 billion, why not?
It's not enough. I worked so hard for this company. I need another $70
billion. So why 25%? Why that specific amount? Basically, he said in his tweets that he wants to limit the risk of a takeover. So currently, if there was a takeover bid that happened and the shareholders of Tesla voted on it, Musk would need 38% of Tesla shareholders to side with him to prevent it, right? So 38% or 39% plus his 12% would get you over the 50% mark. With 25% ownership, of course, only about 25.01 would need to side with him. Or in Musk's words in his tweet, with 25%, it would take twice as many shareholders voting against him than for him to allow a takeover. So that's essentially his rationale, is he wants Tesla to be in a situation where a takeover is pretty hard, but still possible, and only possible if double as many shareholders were against him than for him. 50 against and then 25 kind of in favor.
Right, okay.
So how would Tesla even do Makes this? Sense. Well, they would issue obviously a bunch of new shares and just give them to Musk. That's kind of one way they could go about it, so that he has 25% of the total pool. The problem with that, of course, is that usually when a company issues new shares, at least the company gets something in exchange, right? They get usually the shareholders have a smaller percentage of the company because it's more shares, but they get new capital to inject into the company. This would just be shareholders basically becoming a smaller owner in exchange for Musk's promise of his full attention, which is kind of a funny deal. It's like, if you want me to invest all my knowledge and my skills of AI into this company and not elsewhere, give me $80 billion. I need $80 billion.
Come on, Elon.
As you kind of alluded to, this story is funny, but it's not entirely that's not the whole story. He probably isn't really asking for $80 billion from shareholders. The tweet specifically says 25% voting control. So it's obviously possible for a founder or a CEO to have a larger voting control than ownership through dual class shares, which is kind of what you mentioned. So Meta, for example, has two classes of shares. They have the classic shares, and then they have Zuckerberg's special shares, where he gets his special
the fairy dust shares.
Yeah, exactly. That have 10 votes per share, so he has, you know, only 14% ownership of Meta, but 60% voting power. And his next tweet actually just really confirmed this. He said, I would be fine with a dual class voting structure to achieve this, but I'm told it's impossible to achieve post IPO in Delaware, which is where the company is incorporated. So it does seem to, which is kind of funny because obviously he's aware that he would probably prefer just to take the voting power and not, you know, reduce everyone else's ownership and actually give himself $80 billion in value, basically. But he's also kind of saying he doesn't think it's possible. So I'm not really sure what to think of this, like, thread because on one hand...
What's he going to do?
Yeah, if he just wants voting control, I kind of get that. And if shareholders want to give him just voting power, that's I get that. But to give him, like, another $80 billion of value after he just sold, like, $40 billion to fund, like, some other, you know, fun thing that he's doing on the side, which was Twitter, seems, like, kind of insane.
Yeah, no chance. Like, come on, no chance. Surely there's no world where he just gets gifted $80 or $72 billion. Surely. Like, surely.
Yeah.
Because what would have to happen? Like he would have to put this to the shareholders.
Yeah,
surely he can't just do it.
No. There would have to be a majority.
He'd have to put it to the shareholders. There'd have to be a vote, and then if there's some sort of majority, he would get the $70 billion.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, and it's just for his like full attention. Like he's saying. He wants to work on AI and robotics, and he's obviously got the choice between doing it as intellectual property in Tesla. Or doing it with other companies because he runs other companies, which I just think is just like a really funny thing for a CEO to say. I'm going to take another $80 billion, or I'm just going to, you know, put in 30%.
I'm just
effort.
Trying to think if he can't just do the B class kind of share system. Like, what is there any world where this possibly works? Where he like commits himself, he like writes in a contract that he will. Reinvest the $72 billion straight back into Tesla or something like that.
Yeah, and then I don't know how that works though. Like, because he's not injecting any money. Like, he's just gaining a share. So, like the contract would basically be like he promises to use all his brain power on AI in Tesla. Which
no, but yeah. I'm thinking like, is there some world? I don't know, but is there some world where he can get? Gifted this $72 billion and then he pledges to put all of that money that he receives personally into the growth and development of Tesla in some way?
Yeah, but I mean, he's not receiving anything. He's just like, it's just, I mean, I guess, but it's like, it's not like he's actually putting any cash in the business. He's just taking a share of ownership away from the other shareholders, basically. So there's no, I mean,
and then he could, of course,
then sell those shares and then put the money in the company. But then he sold the shares, which defeats what he's trying to achieve, which is he wants to own a large share. So
it
is just such
there is no way around it.
No, unless he can do the dual class listing, which he said maybe not. But yeah, I just thought that was a hilarious side story. Somehow I just didn't see this. But I saw someone react to it on YouTube and it was just, I just thought it was really funny that he's just like,
that's bizarre.
I'll take another 80 billion. Thanks.
Yeah. And I don't see, because he couldn't draw the equivalent cash from somewhere else and put it in to account for. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how that would work, but I would not be voting for that as a shareholder.
I doubt if that gets put to the shareholders, there's any chance that passes. That is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. Good one, Elon.
Well done.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's no shortage of Elon saying insane stuff on Twitter. So thought it was pretty funny.
Ay. Maybe that's the secret. Maybe I just need to take new money public. Hey guys, by the way, I need more voting rights. More shares.
That's so true. Yeah. Sell 90% of the company to people and then say you won't make videos unless they give it back. What are they going to do? There's no new money without the host. So.
Got him.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to need 50% control back, but I'm not giving you money back.
Jeez. All right. Good luck to you, Elon. I hope it works out for you, mate. Yeah. All right, should we move on?
Yeah, what have we got? Take us through some earnings.
Yeah, we got Google earnings. So I have actually, so we've just got the earnings release. We don't have the conference call yet at the time of recording this, and we don't even have the 10Q yet.
No.
So we just have an earnings release. But mixed bag. Mm-hmm. Overall, I would say pretty good. Pretty good. So where shall we start? Alphabet recorded its fastest quarter for revenue growth since early 2022. So total revenue was up 13.5%. So total revenue went from quarter ended December 31st, 2022, was $76 billion, and now it's $86.3 billion. So that is pretty solid. And of course, we have to remember with Google, there's a big breakdown of all the different revenue segments. So I'll go through those reasonably quickly, hopefully. So the first and biggest category is, of course, Google Search. So Google Search was up 12.7% year over year. So now up to $48 billion in revenue. So of the total revenue of $86 billion, 48 of it comes from just Google Search, just ad revenue from Google Search. Crazy. Which is that is the biggest the biggest chunk. Actually, not the biggest chunk. Google Service. Oh, no, because I guess added together. Yeah, definitely the biggest chunk of their ad revenue. Yep. Sorry, I just had a brain fart.
It's crazy they're still growing at double digits. Like, how's that?
Yeah.
Like, I guess volume but and ad rates going up as well. But it's just crazy. I think it's actually, probably mostly volume. Yeah, but
it's pretty insane still to get that kind of growth.
Yeah.
So YouTube ads. YouTube ads were up 15.5% year over year, but only from $7.9 billion to $9.2 billion, so much less in terms of that revenue category. Then Google Network, so other people hosting Google ads on their own platforms, that was down 2.1%. So that was, $8.297 billion, whereas before last year it was $8.475 billion in Q4.
Yeah.
And then that leaves us with Google total Google advertising, which was up 10.9% year over year. So solid growth overall from Google advertising. Mm. And then, of course, we have on top of their advertising business, we have the subscriptions, the platforms, the devices. That used to be called Google Other, and now they've actually called it. They've teased it out a little bit so that you don't have to remember. And they've called that category Google Subscriptions, Platforms, and Devices. So that category was up 22.7% year over year, so solid growth. It's now up to $10.8 billion in revenue. It was at $8.8 billion in revenue last year for the Q4 of last year, so pretty solid. And that gives us Google Services total, so the total of Google Services up 12.4%. Year over year.
Right.
Then on top of that, so on top of Google Services, we also have Google Cloud as a separate revenue segment, which was up 25.6% year over year. Right. That came in with revenue of $9.2 billion as opposed to $7.3 billion last year. So overall, I think that is pretty solid growth in most areas.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. I think because last year, I think their growth was pretty flat, I believe, just off the top of my head. So, it's crazy to see them bounce back in a big way. I always like to check every year just their YouTube ad revenue. It's always interesting to me to see what's like kind of the size of the YouTube ad economy. So I added up all the quarters. So for 2023, it was in total $31.5 billion, which means about $17 billion paid to creators.
To creators.
Which is, it's just an astounding figure. It's like, wow, it's like, you know, it doesn't ever feel that big, but it's like $17 billion. Mm. That's a big industry.
I guess there are a lot of creators now these days.
There is, on YouTube. Course. Yeah, yeah. It's,
and I'm sure it's very top heavy.
Yeah, of course. But it's fascinating to see
how much Mr. Beast is pulling in.
Yeah, I don't know.
He'd be pulling in a lot.
Yeah, he'd be taking
many millions.
But even still, he'd be a pretty small percentage of the total pool.
Of overall, definitely.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Definitely, yeah. So that's revenue. Yeah, as I said before, total revenue came in at $86 billion. It's up from $76 billion year over year. And now we talk about operating results, operating income. So, of course, it's one thing to generate revenue, but can you generate profit from that business is the next question. So, yeah, the short answer is yes. for Google, they have no problems in that department. But let me tell you more about it anyway. So Google Services came in with operating income of $26.7 billion, up from $20.2 billion year over year. So that is by far their biggest operating income driver. In fact, it makes up more than 100% of their total income from operations, which kind of tells you a little bit about the next categories. However, Google Cloud is no longer the one dragging them down. So for the longest time, Google Cloud was not running profitably. We've spoken in the last couple of quarters how they have just got that profitability and they have maintained that profitability. They generated $864 million in operating profit in the fourth quarter of 2023 versus negative $186 million in the fourth quarter of 2022.
Right.
Yeah. So good to see Google Cloud is coming along. Still nothing crazy, but it could be in the future. That is obviously one of their big focuses, but we'll have to see how that goes. And then Other Bets is still not profitable, but the numbers are consistent with what Sundar was saying about how they need to really hone their efforts onto the more profitable segments and forget about the ones that are bleeding money. So they lost just $863 million in Q4 versus $1.2 billion in Q4 of 2022.
So, be nice to...
Yeah, overall... Yeah, sorry?
I was going to say, it'd be nice to be able to burn $1 billion on just like trying stuff.
Yeah.
$1 billion a year in that.
Yeah. Burning at $1.2 billion a year.
And it doesn't
and
even...
And just being like, well, it's fine.
It doesn't even make a... It's nothing. It's a dot. It's a dot on the map. Yep. And, you know, they obviously can spawn, you know, pretty considerable businesses out of that. So it's just interesting. Yeah, the advantage they
have. That's what I kind of like about Tesla as well, is that when you really analyze their business, it's kind of like, you know, 100 different startups. Like like collectively they come together, and obviously the automotive manufacturing business is enormous. But when you actually break down like all the different things they do, like the chip design and the supercomputers and the full self-driving and like all these little things and like insurance, like a little insurance business here and that, it's like a lot. They just put a lot. They have the budget to be able to put enough money behind these ideas that they can genuinely test whether these are like viable big businesses of the future.
Yeah.
And that's similar to like what Google does as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This could be something we can spend, you know, whereas other companies, if they wanted to start some life extension company and put $500 million towards it, no one can just do that. But a company like Google can be like, yeah, we'll give it a go. And it's not actually that detrimental. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting to watch, because I think like eventually any business is going to like plateau in growth. So you always, even when you're growing, you always have to be like, just at least on a small scale, testing stuff so that you can kind of, they can find the next business that's going to fuel the growth for Google. Maybe it's been like, you know, Google Cloud is potentially coming through as where the growth will be in the future in their services as kind of ads slows down inevitably. But not yet, I guess.
Yeah, clearly not yet. Although, I don't know. Investors weren't happy. I mean, double-digit growth in most areas. Investors, they were not happy. Alphabet shares slid more than 6% after the company reported earnings. If that just tells you that you can't predict which way stock's going to go post-earnings, I don't know what will. But the only other thing I had to kind of add in for the limited information we've gotten so far from Google was in terms of their headcount. So last year they had 12,000 job cuts, which amounted to roughly 6% of its workforce. And now looking at this most recent data, their current employees at the end of December 2023 was 182,500,
right,
down from 190,000 in Q4 2022. Okay. They also note in the earnings release, in January 2023, we announced a reduction of our workforce, and as a result, we recorded employee severance and related charges of $2.1 billion for the 12 months ended December 31st, 2023. In addition, we are taking actions to optimize our global office space. So still working on trimming the fat.
There you go. And speaking of that, let's talk about... Let's talk about job cuts.
Beautiful segue.
In 2024. You stole a little bit of my story, but it wasn't a large part of my story. No, it's okay. I wanted to first talk about, so 2022 and 2023, particularly 2022, there were big layoffs, especially in tech. We saw kind of the tech stocks roll off in 2022 and company growth stalled. Like, yeah, we spoke about Google. I think they didn't grow too much in 2022. So a lot of companies were laying off a lot of workers. Some of the big ones, Ernst & Young, a big accounting firm, cut 3,000 jobs. Spotify cut 17% of its workforce, 1,500 jobs. T-Mobile cut 7% of its workforce, 5,000 jobs. Amazon cut 9,000 jobs, although Amazon, I think, employs over a million people or something insane like that, so very small percentage. Meta cut 10,000 jobs, and as you just said, Alphabet cut 12,000. So going into 2024, despite some of those, obviously some of those numbers, you know, they seem pretty astounding, you know, 10,000, 5,000. Despite all of that, US unemployment at the end of the year was still at basically a record low. It was at 3.7%. I think the record low is maybe 3.4% or something like that. But regardless, anything in the 3% or even the 4% range is insanely low. The labor market has continued to be extremely tight. So even though some companies have been laying off, broadly speaking, or at least on average, I don't know, these numbers are kind of flawed in some ways because they're just looking at broad averages, but generally speaking, the labor market has been incredibly favorable for workers, and that's why there's also been, you know, a lot of wage growth and that sort of thing.
It's kind of mind-blowing, really.
It is.
How low unemployment has been, yeah.
Especially given...
It's very unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Like, you know, rates go up considerably. So you expect businesses to have higher expenses. You know, consumers have less money, so you would think they'd be spending a little bit less. And all of that you would think would culminate in, you know, a lot more layoffs and that sort of thing. But it hasn't really happened. However, hiring has kind of slowed in recent months. And employees, this is a report from the Wall Street Journal, I think, employees are quitting at a lower rate than pre-pandemic. So they were kind of seeing that maybe the market is, you know, loosening a little bit, becoming a little less tight. And with that said, there was quite a few layoff announcements this year already so far. So as you said, Alphabet announced that they'll be laying off, I think they said several hundred employees, shifting their focus towards investment in AI. So just kind of reallocating resources from areas where they think they don't need as many employees to focus in on artificial intelligence. Bank of New York Mellon to cut 1,500 jobs, 3% of its workforce. BlackRock will cut 3% of its workforce, which is 500 people. Coinbase and Crypto.com cutting 20% each of their workforce. Microsoft was an interesting one there to cut 10,000 employees, but represents less than 5% of its staff. PayPal cutting 2,000 jobs. Yeah, so some of these companies, you can't even comprehend how many people they hire. Like Walmart and Amazon, I think both of them hire more than a million people.
Unbelievable.
Which is just a million people. Like, that's crazy. Like, like, what's their payroll it's like? like? It's insane. Yeah.
It's kind of crazy saying, like, laying off, you know, BlackRock's laying off 500 people, and then Microsoft is laying off less than 5% of its staff, but that's 10,000 employees.
Insane.
Yeah, unbelievable. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, PayPal 2,000, 7% of their workforce. Here's a crazy one. Salesforce to cut 10% of its staff, 80,000 people.
Whoa.
Which is, I think that's the biggest number in the list there. So the biggest number of people.
That's huge.
And not the biggest percentage of staff, but yeah, 80,000 is crazy.
That's huge.
To even like
80,000.
Like that's got to be it.
I didn't realize Salesforce had that many employees.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? It's insane.
Yeah.
To be fair, in Salesforce's case, they're talking, you know, not in the US. This is their global,
global
workforce. So,
surely.
You know, that kind of plays a role. So why are these layoffs happening? Well, it kind of varies, I think, a little bit industry to industry. So in tech, for example, lots of companies are investing very heavily in AI. So as, you know, Alphabet actually said directly, a lot of companies are just reallocating resources. So whether that's laying off people in other areas and then hiring in new areas that are related to AI, or just laying off people and then allocating that cash flow to assets that they need to buy in those areas. In the financial sector, why are layoffs happening? Steve Eisman, he did an interview where he kind of spoke about this pretty clearly. He kind of sees it as three factors that are hurting their ability to grow: higher interest rates, lower deposits, and stricter capital requirements. So what does that mean? Higher interest rates means paying out more interest to depositors, of course. So your savings accounts have higher rates. Of course, higher rates also does mean they can sell mortgages at higher rate at higher rates. But banks, since COVID, have a lot of fixed assets on their books that have really low interest rates. So even though they can now, of course, sell mortgages at a higher rate, they are kind of stuck with, a lot of the banks are stuck with enormous amounts of, say, 10-year government bonds that they bought in 2020 at less than 1%. So they've got all these assets earning absolutely nothing. And now they're having to pay out more to depositors because of the higher interest rates. The second factor was deposits at US banks have been declining for well over a year now, which of course means that they have less of an ability to lend out. And capital requirements got quite a bit stricter after the banking crisis that happened just last year. So those are kind of the reasons why the financial sector is kind of looking to cut costs. And then just broadly, I think it's, you know, we've spoken about it a lot. Of course, higher rates mean higher cost of debt for businesses. And what we're probably going to start seeing this year, and especially over the next 3 to 5 years, is a lot of companies refinancing their low interest debt into higher debt. You know, companies often have 3, 5, 7, 10, 12 year fixed periods on their debt. So a lot of companies have really low interest rate debt at the moment that will roll over at some point into a few percentage points higher. And, you know, as that happens, you know, companies can obviously see that coming. So that obviously plays a role as well in wanting to cut costs now to prepare for that.
Yeah. This kind of stuff makes me think, like, there's so many people that rejoice, like, what are you talking about? There's no recession. There's no economic problems. You know, nothing's going wrong. You always get like those people where you make a really well kind of reasoned video on YouTube, and you're kind of like, yeah, well, these are some of the, you know, you're not doomsday predicting, saying, oh, the, you know, sky's gonna fall. You're saying, look, these are some reasons why, you know, things might be a little bit tougher this year. And you get people in the comments saying, oh, you're wrong, and blah blah blah. But I think that this is kind of showing that the that maybe we haven't quite felt the full impact of all of this kind of all the macroeconomic changes just yet. I mean, everybody's kind of rejoicing that, you know, we got through and there's been no recession, and now the Fed's going to cut interest rates and we're through. But I just look at stuff like this and I'm like, oh,
yeah,
really? Like, are we really through?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously impossible to know, you know, what's going to happen. But these are real risk factors. They're just kind of things that are there. Right, it's not, you know, I agree. You're right. A lot of people say, well, the rate hikes have stopped, so we're good. But it's like, well, you know, maybe rates are already at an unsustainable level for a lot of businesses when the debt rolls into a high interest rate. It's just that they haven't had to refinance yet, right? Like, or maybe you know, some households are negative cash flow, but they haven't run out of savings yet. So like, there's not to say something, you know, to shout doom and gloom and say something is happening, but these are, you know, real things that are there, and They're just risk factors, and we never know how it's going to play out. Maybe it works out all right, and or maybe it doesn't. So yeah.
I hope it works out all right.
Yeah, and long term,
I don't know. Maybe I'm too bearish. Long term, I'm confident it will all work out okay. And if not, then we're all dead. So who cares?
Nice, great way to end a podcast.
All right, we're all gonna die anyway. Cheery note. Is that all we had to talk about for that one?
That's all.
Oh, that's all. That's actually how I'm ending this. Yeah. All right. On that cheery note, hey, you start from, what's that Monty Python quote? You start from nothing, you're going back to nothing. What you lost? Nothing. All right. Well, with that beautiful ending to the podcast, we are going to bounce out of here. I'm about to go on a cruise, so I got to make a flight. Yeah, yeah. So I'm going on the Virgin Voyages boat, which will be interesting. Mm. So I'll let you guys know next week how that goes. Mm. But yeah, I'm very excited. So I got to make my plane. I'm coming down. I'm coming down to Melbourne, so I'll see you later on today, yeah, Hamish. We'll go soon. Get some food. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll see you soon, and then tomorrow, I'm out of here. All right, guys, thanks very much for tuning in, as always. We hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.